Well, it's been a while. Welcome to Blah Blah Sports, talking UFC. Benny with you, along with Thomas Crossan. And there's a lot to talk about. Of course, 205 happened over a week ago, but we've been busy in terms of work, in terms of getting the stuff done for Survivor Series. That review, by the way, will happen next week, but for now, we're going to talk about UFC 205. Before we get into that, though, Tom, how you been, man?
Good. Hanging in there, taking it day by day.
And you should know that this is a special Thanksgiving podcast. Of course, everyone giving thanks. And what's your favorite Thanksgiving Day food?
Stuffing.
I like stuffing as well.
It's you know, I actually never liked it until last year, and I just decided to try it because I'm an adult and I should be branching out my choice of food, and I just went for it, and
it's just bread.
It's beautiful.
It's just like mushy bread.
It's wonderful.
It's awesome. I've tried dipping bread in like water before, because I've always been told, like, oh, that's what you eat in prison, and I was like, well, I might as well get started now. And then I tried it before, and I was like, oh, that's disgusting. I can't imagine you ever eating mushy bread. But if stuffing's fine to me, the worst one is cranberries. I hate the cranberry sauce. It's disgusting.
Yes.
Yams are disgusting.
Yes.
I know I probably shouldn't say this because my family's probably gonna listen to this, but when I go over my grandfather's on Thanksgiving, they always have cream of like onion. And the only thing that's good for is like killing plants. Like, so, like, I really don't want to put that in my mouth. But, nah, I'm looking forward to turkey. I think we all are. Mashed potatoes, stuffing, and just being around our family and having a good time. But watching football as well. Thank God the Eagles aren't playing. Like, I'm very – because last year was a disaster. Last year they played the Lions, and that was an utter disaster. But that's reserved for the sports. That's reserved for the sports podcast. We'll talk more about football. There's a lot to talk about with football and stuff. But anyway, let's get down to giving thanks about UFC and what happened at 205. Now, of course, we'll work our way up the card. We'll talk about what McGregor did and what he said and everything. But right now we're going to talk about the prelims. A couple of iconic names were on the prelims. We had Michael Johnson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. We had Frankie Edgar. He was fighting as well. Jim Miller, believe it or not, he was all the way down. What did we see on the prelims? I'm shocked that Frankie Edgar was on the prelims, by the way. But what did we see on the prelims, Tom, that was worth tuning in a little earlier for?
Excuse me, but I want to point out Jim Miller. Thiago Alves used to be fighting in the weight class above 170 pounds, mm-hmm. and he had planned to drop to 155, and he missed weight, which I expected because he cuts a lot of weight to make 170.
Yeah.
And in the New York Athletic Commission, because it's new, it's you know, it's the first card there, it's newly considered legal. With their weigh-in procedures, you have to weigh in within 5 pounds of your opponent or they don't let you fight, which is why Donald Cerrone's fight got scrapped. So Jim Miller stopped his weight cut and weighed in at 158 so that he could be within 5 pounds of Thiago Alves to fight him, and came out and put on a show. He did it all. He outstruck him. He out-wrestled him. He out-grappled him. He looked fantastic, and you know, shouts out, and he's a Jersey boy, so shout out to Jim Miller.
Yeah, Jim Miller, he's got a lot of love. Another Jersey boy is Frankie Edgar, and he was fighting as well. What did we see in his fight?
I'll tell you, Frankie Edgar is one of the most underrated and underappreciated fighters ever. I mean, if you look at like the size difference in the guys that he fights. He used to fight up at 155 pounds, and he fought some monsters and, you know, was the champion and had one of the longest runs ever, and then drops a weight class, and he's still outsized. You know, if he really cut a lot of weight, he could drop another weight class and go to 135. He fights these guys way bigger than him and always finds a way to win. he can take the shots from the best of them. You know, Jeremy Stephens is one of the hardest hitting guys at featherweight, and Frankie just walked right through him.
And then, of course, we had the Eagle versus Michael Johnson. What did we see in that fight?
I'll tell you, Khabib is quickly becoming one of my favorite fighters. Well, aside from his post-fight interview where he went nuts on McGregor, but during the fight last week, they released a video of him on top of Michael Johnson telling him, please, please give up. I don't want to keep hurting you. I need to fight for the title. You have to give up. Please give up. And then in between rounds, while his coaches are giving him instructions, he's like, I don't want to listen to you. He turns around and is screaming at Dana White, you know, you better be careful because I'm going to hurt your boy. The guy that makes you all the money, I'm going to hurt him real bad, while his coaches are giving him instructions. He is a bad dude. I think that win got him to 24-0. Mm-hmm. And I still don't think he's going to fight for the title next. But, man, I love Khabib. I love him.
You got to like a guy that's willing to use his mouth to sell a fight. And Khabib can possibly do that. And again, especially they're going to need to line up some guys in that division to get in line for a title fight with McGregor now. We'll get to McGregor right now, but first we'll go to the main card and talk about the first fight. We had Raquel Pennington versus Miesha Tate. My oh my, how far Miesha Tate has fallen. She looks like she's riding a little bit of a roller coaster there. What did you see in the women's bantamweight matchup?
Yeah, Miesha Tate just looked like she didn't want to be in there anymore, and she said it to her cornerman in between the rounds. She said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'm not showing up. I'm not, like, I just don't want to do this anymore. And they're saying, no, like, you can do this. You know, you always show up in the gym. And she's like, the gym isn't the cage. I'm not showing up. And then, you know, the fight was over. We all saw what happened. She retired. But I think she just needs to take some time off because she's been busy. She fights, you know, three times a year every year. And she was just the champion, you know, 4 months ago. And, you know, going from the champion 4 months ago to now retiring, I don't buy it. I think she's going to take a break, maybe take like 9 months to a year off. I think she'll come back. I mean, but if not, thank you to Miesha Tate for all the great fights and all the great memories. But I'm not trying to take anything away from Raquel Pennington because she looked great. That was probably her best performance ever.
Hard to believe that Miesha Tate at 30 years old is completely done, but we don't. It's the usual shelf life of a female fighter is probably into their 30s. Miesha Tate's getting there, but I think I agree with you. I think Miesha Tate follows a little bit of the Ronda Rousey situation, where Rousey just needed to take some time off to get her head straight. Though I don't buy Rousey competing at the level that she was at one point. But
I agree.
Tough fight for Miesha Tate. Hopefully that she does, because she can take about a year off and come back and still be there. All right, Yoel Romero versus Chris Weidman. Wow, that's all I have to say about this fight, Tom.
Yeah, that was not a finish that I had expected.
So what did you see in that? I mean, knockout by a flying knee to Chris Weidman. Like, what went down there? What failed on Weidman's part?
Well, it went totally different than I had expected. You know, I'm a big Chris Weidman fan, but, you know, stylistically, Yoel Romero's and like a 2-time Olympic wrestler, Olympic medalist, in wrestling. So, and he's shorter, so he can change levels easier. I thought he was just going to go out there and wrestle Chris to death and just, you know, sit on top of him, but it was actually the opposite. The first round, Romero was kind of hesitant, and Chris Weidman was out wrestling him, taking him down. And then the second round, you know, it was closer. I thought Yoel came out and won the second round, but I think that Yoel took the first 10 minutes of the fight, kind of just timing him, you know, noticing how he sets up his takedowns. And then right at the beginning of the third, when Weidman went for that takedown, Yoel just timed it perfectly and just landed that knee, and it was a thing of beauty to watch. And, you know, I didn't want them to stop showing the replay because it was so beautiful. I loved it. It was fantastic.
Weidman goes, and 2016 has not been a good year for him. Weidman goes from 13-0 to now 0-2 in 2016, 13-2, lost his middleweight championship, and now drops one to Yoel Romero. Where does Weidman go from here?
Well, there's a lot going on in the middleweight division. You know, you got Bisping, who's the champion, who most people would argue wouldn't beat anybody else in the top 10. You know, Rockhold just had to pull out of his fight. Musasi just won this past weekend. He doesn't have a fight. It's looking like Romero's going to fight for the title. So I'd like to see Weidman fight Gegard Mousasi. But I think Gegard's probably going to fight either Jacare next or Luke Rockhold. So I think between those four, whoever doesn't fight each other should fight each other. So it's looking like Rockhold is going to fight Mousasi. And then I think Jacare and Chris Weidman should fight. Because, I mean, those are the four best guys, mm-hmm. other than, you know, Bisping and Romero. Those are the guys. So they all got to fight each other. I think that's what it's looking like. But, I mean, after two straight losses, he might want to take a step back and look for somebody lower on in the card. Maybe a Tim Boach, who also got a big knockout on the same card, who's a lower ranked, still a savage, but that's a fight I'd like to see.
Maybe even a Dan Henderson or even going to an Anderson. I mean, Anderson Silva doesn't have a lot of tread left on the tire, but...
That would be interesting, seeing that trilogy, because, you know, he never got his respect due for beating him twice. You know, everyone's saying both of those were a fluke, so I'd like to see Weidman beat Anderson Silva a third time.
See if we can get the assurance there. All right, moving to the women's strawweight fight. This was a title fight, and I was able to watch this fight from the bar at Rowan. Shout out to Landmark, even though of course their mixed drinks are terrible. I don't like the fact they're served in plastic cups. But we had Joanna Champion taking on Karolina Kowalkiewicz, and from what I saw, this was pretty much straightforward. Joanna's a savage. That girl was beating the crap out of Karolina, the Polish princess. But anything you want to add to that? Because I was just going to move right on. Joanna looks like she's going to dominate the strawweight division until they can get a competitor up against her.
I mean, I think that was definitely Joanna's closest fight yet. I mean, she had like two hematomas on her head. I'll tell you, I think Karolina is probably the second best girl in that division. I'd like to see them run that back. You know, I mean, the scores went 49-46. I had it the same way. But I mean, I thought the rounds were relatively close. It wasn't like a beating like Joanna put on Jessica Penne. I mean, both of their faces were messed up. I really don't see anybody else in that division, you know, coming close. So, and they're both Polish. They got the storyline there. Let's bring it back. I'd like to see that fight again.
Joanna now moves to 13-0. And her MMA career, and even before that, her amateur career, she was 2-0 in there as well. So really 15-0. You have to think. I mean, she just beats the number one contender in Claudia Gadenla, and then she beats Karolina. Is there anyone you can line up after that?
Yeah, I mean, her first fight with Claudia, the three-rounder before she was champion, was close. When they've rematched, it wasn't close. So, I mean, I think the top two in that division, other than her, are Karolina and Claudia. Mm-hmm. So, I really don't see anybody in that division, you know, coming close.
I don't know if they can run up Rose Namajunas yet. I don't know if they can.
Oh, I actually forgot about Rose. Didn't she lose her last fight to Karolina though?
I think she did. But I'm looking at the lineups here. Paige Van Zandt. I mean, I love Paige Van Zandt. She's hot, but she ain't ready for a title.
Yeah,
fight.
She's still young though. I think she's like 21, maybe 22. Uh-huh. But I actually forgot about Rose. She's good. So maybe in the future. I mean, I'd like to see that fight now. But I think if they were to fight, I think Joanna would spank her.
Oh yeah, we're talking about a girl right now that I don't think she's not really getting the recognition she deserves, and it's kind of sad, But I mean, we're talking about someone that literally has never lost in their career. She's held this title for the better part of a year, moving towards 2 years when I'll get into March. I just don't see anyone they can line up right now that can beat her. I mean, she's just so dominant in a division that's very thin at the top right now. But yeah. All right, we'll move on to the next title fight. I actually caught the majority of the beginning of this fight, and I was shocked to see it end in a draw. Tyron Woodley versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Now, before we start this, I have to say, I'm no expert in mixed martial arts. You can tell by, you know, not knowing the lingo sometimes, and me not being able to pronounce a lot of the names. But I can tell you that, you know, in a fight, you do not put your hands down by your sides. And Wonderboy, you are a freaking lunatic. When I was watching the beginning of this fight, I was like, oh, Woodley's going to kill him. And for the most part, that first round, Woodley was killing him. I don't know how this became a draw. I don't know how they could ever think that Wonderboy won anything. But to me, I mean, Woodley does retain, but the rematch, this is not going to be pretty. That's just my opinion. But Tom, what did you see in the welterweight matchup?
Well, I mean, first off, I want to comment on him having his hands down. He is a very good striker. Mm-hmm. You know, you're really not supposed, obviously not supposed to have your hands down. But, I mean, it's worked out for him. I think he's got, I think, one loss in his MMA career to Matt Brown. Let me check. Yeah, he's got one loss in his MMA career, which was back in 2012 to Matt Brown. And he's 37-0 as a kickboxer. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got good striking. So, you know, it looks weird watching him strike with his hands down, but it
does,
works for him.
Especially because Woodley at points was just eating him alive.
Yeah, but I will say, as far as the fight, I thought I was also amazed that it went to a draw. I thought Woodley won at least three of the rounds, one of them being a 10-8. So, I mean, I thought it should have been 48-46, but, I mean, they're probably going to run it back right away, to try and figure it out. And, I just think that they need to fix the judging, because the two judges that had it a tie had Woodley winning two rounds, Thompson winning three rounds. And of the two rounds that Woodley won, one of the judges gave round one a 10-8 for Woodley, and the other judge gave Woodley a 10-8 for round three. Like, they got to figure something out. And Woodley dropped Thompson, what, four times? I mean, come on. Woodley won that fight.
Oh, yeah. Just from the opening, I mean, that first round alone, if Thompson was able to come back and win one, or I mean, if I could see, you know, oh, he won more of the rounds, but when you dominate an opening round as much as Woodley did, I'm sorry, whatever round that Thompson was able to eke out towards the end, I just don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, from what I saw, that fight was all Woodley the entire time. But
yeah, I mean. Thompson has good striking. I guess I understand giving him a couple of the rounds because he was point fighting. I mean, that's what you get with the 10-point must system. You know, you win the round, you get 10. But, I mean, as far as finishing, Woodley dropped him four times, almost finished him, had him in a super tight guillotine, which I couldn't even believe Thompson escaped from. I mean, Woodley landed the better shots. He got closer to finishing. So Thompson, for at least two of the rounds, out-jabbed him. Like, come on. Those rounds can't be worth the same as Woodley dropping him and passing his guard and ground and pounding him for 4.5 minutes. Like, they got to figure something out as far as the scoring system.
I'm no expert, but, 45 strikes in the first round, 14 strikes in the second round, 8 strikes in the third, 38 in the fourth, and another 8... in the fifth for Woodley. I believe that's over 100. His percentages are pretty good. I think Woodley won that fight, and I don't think it's much of an argument. Wonderboy seems like he has a lot of skill. I still think he's a lunatic.
I mean, I only watched the fight live. I haven't rewatched it. But I can't imagine I guess maybe because I know the outcome, I might be able to see it more, but watching it live, I couldn't believe that, you know, some of the judges gave Thompson three rounds.
To me, it's asinine. But anyway, so where does this division go from here? Do you think they're going to trot out a rematch because it was a draw, or do you think we may get like Thompson fighting Lawler, or maybe Condit or Cerrone?
Well, I think it was announced that night that they're going to run it back because it was a draw.
Okay.
I don't necessarily agree. I don't think a challenger should get a rematch if he loses, or, well, he didn't lose. If he doesn't win, I don't think he should get a rematch. But, yeah, I'd like to see Thompson fight Lawler because, you know, before Woodley beat Lawler, Thompson was all like, oh, I want to fight Lawler, I want to fight Lawler, because he thought Lawler was going to beat Woodley. And then Woodley wins, and he's like, oh, I want to fight Woodley. And, you know, Woodley at first was hesitant. He's like, oh, you wanted to fight Lawler, go fight Lawler. But, I mean, Damian Maia's on a hot streak. I think he's won six in a row,
mm-hmm.
Six, maybe seven. And he's getting up there in age. I think Damian Maia's 38, so he's not going to be around much longer. So I think he should fight for the title next, and then see Wonder Boy fight Lawler. I think Condit retired. He said he retired. You know, his coaches say he's in the gym a lot, so who really knows? Donald Cerrone's fighting Matt Brown. Kelvin Gastelum's out of the division now. But maybe watch Thompson. I'd like to see him fight Neil Magny. You know, they're both tall, they're both long, they're both good strikers. That'd be a tough fight as well. But I think he's gonna get the rematch. I think they're gonna do a rematch right away.
You mentioned Gastelum. Explain his situation, because I find it very entertaining.
Well, he doesn't take weight cutting easy on himself. He was on The Ultimate Fighter for the middleweight division, which is 185, 15 pounds heavier than than welterweight. And on the show, not once did he make weight the first time. Like, he went to the weigh-in, he had to do the whole naked weigh-in with the towel, and then didn't make it. And then I don't remember if he got another hour or another 2 hours to try again. But he always made it the second time, and I think this is his fourth time missing weight at welterweight. Jesus. I mean, the guy's like 5'9". If he could get his stuff together and figure out his weight, he could probably make lightweight. 5'9", that's how tall Conor is. Conor McGregor's 5'9". They're the same height, and Kelvin he blows up. He gets over 200 pounds. He can't make the weight, and I don't understand why he just doesn't go to middleweight. He won The Ultimate Fighter at middleweight. He after the last time he missed weight, Dana White made him go up, and he fought at middleweight, and he dominated Nate Marquard, and then he tried to drop again, and he missed weight. And it's like, and when he misses weight at 170, he's not even close. Like, he fought Tyron Woodley about a year or so ago, and he weighed in at 180 pounds for a welterweight fight. And apparently this past fight, he again was not under 180 pounds for weigh-ins. It's like, and his camp is trying to say to the UFC, oh, he'll get it together next time. No. You missed it four times. Like, that division, you're not going there anymore. You're done. Figure out if you want to go up a weight class and you're complaining that you're too small for that weight class, get in the gym, lift some weights, figure it out. But you're not making 170 again.
The welterweight division is a division that's very it's top heavy. Of course, you know, it could thin itself out. But, you know, you mentioned the middleweight division. The middleweight division is suffering. I mean, a lot of the guys in the middleweight division look like they're getting ready to retire. So maybe he might have some more success there, picking on inexperienced or veteran guys and being able to move up the rankings a little quicker and maybe getting a title fight. But I just shake my head at Gastelum. This is ridiculous. Do you think it's a matter of he just physically, like, because some people just, they have trouble losing weight. I mean, we get that. But do you think it's that, or do you think it's mental?
I think it's just he waits too long to start cutting. You know, usually most guys diet for, you know, mm-hmm. 4 to 6 weeks. And then, like, the last week before the fight is when they really start cutting out the water weight. And I think he just waits too long. I don't think he diets right away. I really don't know. I don't know the guy. I don't know people that know him. But, you know, I've heard Chael Sonnen talk about it because Chael Sonnen coached him on The Ultimate Fighter. And he even said himself, you know, he waits too long to start losing weight. See, so it's my assumption that he doesn't start dieting till like 3 weeks out and then just tries to cut too much water and his body can't handle it. So he doesn't get his weight low enough healthily so that he can cut the water out and make the weight. And he tries to cut too much water weight too quickly, and you know his body just can't take it.
See, to me, that's more of an attitude issue, if anything, because if everyone's telling you what your problem is and you're just not fixing it, I mean, that to me, that's an attitude thing. But
yeah,
and
it sucks because he's so talented. He's so good.
He is
so good at fighting, and the thing is about him, which is crazy. A lot of people have said this. When he's in the gym, you know, he's like the last guy in and the first guy to leave. And he doesn't work that hard. And he always gets his ass kicked in the gym. But him in the gym and him in the cage are two totally different animals. When he gets in the cage, he is a beast. And it sucks that he can't get his weight under control because, you know, looking at the middleweight division, you know, the top six guys are all unbelievable. I don't think he can... you know, get into the top five in the middleweight. But, I mean, welterweight, he's so good. It sucks. It sucks watching this happen to him. But, I mean, you got to be a professional. If you can't make the weight, you got to go up a weight class.
That's the bottom line right there. But, you know, some people are just there. Some people don't show up for practice and show up for the game. To me, Gastelum, he's got to get it together. If anything, I think it's an attitude thing. You know, it's about committing yourself to what you're doing, and he might find himself out soon.
Yeah, but it could be it.
But anyway, let's move on to the fight of the night. The reason that everyone tuned in, and McGregor's got the world by the brass balls here, and it was a fight that a lot of us wanted to see. Yeah, we wanted to see if McGregor could do it, and he did. He became the double champion, as he put it, winning the lightweight title over Eddie Alvarez in a shocker, a knockout in the second round. What went wrong for Eddie? And after that, I want your opinion on where Conor McGregor goes from here.
Man, this I think this took a lot of people by surprise. What went wrong for Eddie? I'll quote Eddie himself because he went on, you know, Chael Sonnen's podcast a couple days after the fight, and he said, you know, I don't know what it was, but for whatever reason, I went against my game plan. Because, you know, Conor's got that straight left. So the game plan going in was to circle to the left and wrestle. And for whatever reason, when he was in there, he circled to the right and tried to box him. And, I mean, Conor's got great striking. And if you circle towards that left hand, you're gonna get clocked with it. And, you know, Conor hits hard. You're going to go to sleep. And that's what happened. He didn't use his wrestling like I expected him to, like a lot of people expected him to. And, you know, Conor came out the better man. Conor's the man, dude. He is fantastic.
Like I said, he's got the world by the brass balls. So where does McGregor go from here? I mean, now he literally has the weight of two divisions, the lightweight and the featherweight division, on his shoulders. You know, they named Jose Aldo the interim champion. We'll see how long that lasts. But you got to think. I mean, he's the face of this sport, and right now he can go anywhere he wants.
Well, there's a lot of options. I know he's got a baby on the way. I think his baby is due, I think he said, in either March or May. I don't remember what he said. Mm-hmm. But I know it's been announced that he's taking time off till after the baby's born. So I think, let's say the baby is born in May. So, you know, give him a month or so to deal with fatherhood. And then you got, you know, a title fight is going to be an 8-week camp. So we're probably looking at July or August of next year. A lot can happen in that time. But as far as the featherweight division, he's not going back down. He's struggled to make that weight in the past. I don't think he goes back down unless there's a big payday opportunity. And the only way there will be a big payday opportunity is if Anthony Pettis is the option. Because Anthony Pettis, regardless of him losing, what did he lose, 3 straight fights, whatever it is, mm-hmm. Anthony Pettis is a star. He's a big star from when he was the champion in the lightweight division. He's got a lot of fans. But Aldo's the interim champ. Aldo said he's not fighting again unless it's against Connor for the unification belt. You got Frankie, who just won. You got Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis fighting. So I don't see there being any way that Connor could fight Anthony Pettis, because if Connor goes back down, he's going to have to fight the interim champ, which is Aldo, and that's not going to happen. And if Pettis beats Holloway and then gets a chance to fight Aldo, I don't think Aldo's going to do it because he wants to fight Connor. So I think Connor's going to scrap that. You could do the Nate Diaz trilogy, but I really can't see the UFC doing that, especially for the belt. Considering, you know, Nate Diaz is really like a 500 fighter at lightweight. Mm-hmm. Could do a rematch with Eddie, could fight Khabib, could fight Tony Ferguson. You know, there's talks of him going up and fighting Tyron Woodley and going for a third belt. Which I think would be a stupid idea, but that's another conversation. I personally, since he likes money, I think he's gonna try to fight Floyd Mayweather.
Okay, time out. Wait a second. Okay, so I've heard the murmurs of this. Where the hell did this come from?
Believe it or not, Floyd started that.
Oh my God.
That was all Floyd Mayweather. He started that conversation. And I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the UFC would allow it.
I just want to know how they would structure it. Like, what
Floyd wants is Floyd wants it under his promotion.
Oh, of course.
He wants it straight boxing rules. He wants a 60-40 pay-per-view payout. Percentage-wise, and he wants $100 million show money at least.
Of course he does.
So I don't think that would happen.
No.
But I think that's what Connor's going to try to negotiate, especially now he's got a kid coming in, so he wants that. He always talks about, oh, you want that McGregor money? I think he wants that Mayweather money because,
oh, yeah,
let's be honest, Mayweather's a bigger star. A fight against Mayweather would make way more money.
I really hope that they do a series. I would be interested in a series where they start with a boxing match and they go to a mixed martial arts match, and then they go to a combination of the both, maybe kickboxing or something along the lines of that.
Yeah, it's comparing apples and oranges. If they fight MMA, Connor wins. If they fight boxing, Floyd wins. I mean, like, you get all these people. Apparently, all these pro boxers now are saying, "Oh, Connor could beat Floyd. Floyd's getting old. Floyd's getting old in age. He doesn't have those fight years that most people have.
No.
He's 49-0.
He fights maybe once, like every 2 years.
Yeah, he doesn't fight that much, and when he does, he doesn't get rocked. Like, he doesn't get punched that much. You know, he had over 100 amateur fights. He's got 49 pro fights, but guy doesn't get hit. That's what makes him great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the people that are like, oh, do you hear the way he talks? Yeah, he talks that way because he's stupid, not because he's been hitting the head too much. He's always been stupid. He can't even read. He's not a smart person. Great fighter. Arguably
he's a fantastic fighter. He's a fantastic fighter. To me, that would be the moment of 2017, and more than likely that's when's going to happen too. To me that would be the Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao of 2017.
And, yeah, I think that would be bigger now than that fight was, because you know, Pacquiao fought a couple weeks ago and, like, nobody knew.
Pacquiao, you know, he's talented, he's an icon, but he's not McGregor.
Yeah, and I mean, McGregor's young, he hits hard. Could he knock Floyd out?
Probably.
Probably. Will he? Probably not. But, I mean, you know, until that gets brought into the realm of real possibility, I think it's just talk right now. But what I think is going to happen personally is I think the UFC, because I know Khabib has talked about, oh, I'm not fighting again until it's for the title. I think the UFC is going to convince him to fight Tony Ferguson. They're the top two guys. And then Conor's going to fight the winner. You know, the talk of him going up and fighting Tyron Woodley is, I think that's absurd. I mean, but I thought it was absurd him fighting Dos Anjos when that first got announced, and yep. I thought it was absurd him fighting Eddie. I didn't think he could do it, but I mean, I'm done doubting Conor. If Conor goes up and fights Tyron Woodley, I'm putting money on Conor.
Conor McGregor is now the second ranked pound for pound fighter in the UFC, and I don't think there's a single person that doubts that. But I do want to say, I think that there's going to be a little bit of a trial and error here between McGregor being the dual champion, because I think it's honest to God, this is probably what's best for the UFC. If you get an icon like Conor McGregor, you want him to champion over as many divisions as possible. It's just a matter of, is it going to completely screw up the sport? And I think that's where we start to get in a conversation between what is best for the UFC. Hardcore fans will say that what McGregor's doing is probably not good for the fighting aspect of the sport. But casual fans, they're being drawn in thanks to McGregor. So you have to look at money and you have to look at the advertisement of the sport. But I can tell you that being that this was the platform to do this kind of thing at in New York City, I don't know. What was your instant reaction when you saw that he won and, you know, thinking now two divisions are going to be tied up because of one guy?
Well, it was a great move. It was a great business move by the UFC. It was a great move by Conor to campaign for it. And it was a great move by Eddie taking the fight. But, I mean, this whole everyone's saying he should be stripped of whatever title, they don't get the point. The point of this whole UFC 205, the Garden, Conor going, people have won championships in two divisions before. Never in the UFC has it happened simultaneously. That was the selling point. That was the point. And everybody's like, oh, strip him. No, that's not how it works. That's not the point of this. So I thought it was a good business move by the UFC. I thought it was a good decision by Conor and Eddie to go for it. And another thing about this whole strip Conor, he won the title less than a year ago. He beat Jose Aldo last December. It's been 11 months since he won the title. He's an active fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's fighting in other divisions, but he had the two Diaz fights this year, and now this. He's fought four times in the last 11 months, which is more than, you know, 90% of the roster. So the people that are complaining that he should be stripped should shut up and go out there and fight as often as Conor does. And second of all, Dominic Cruz, when he first won the title and he got hurt, they didn't strip him for 3 years, and he wasn't fighting. Conor's fighting. He's not fighting in the division, but he's fighting. Leave the guy alone.
I see.
And as far as the featherweight and the lightweight division, there's enough going on that you know, you can have fights going on. In featherweight, you got Jose Aldo's the interim champion. You got Anthony Pettis and Max Holloway fighting. Ricardo Lamas just fought. Frankie Edgar just fought. Jeremy Stephens just fought. So they got some stuff that can happen in that division. As far as the lightweight division, the top two guys are Khabib and Tony.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to fight. Conor's next fight will probably be the winner of that.
Yeah, these divisions, the featherweight and the lightweight division, they're packed full of talent.
Yeah, the top 15, they're all savages. They can all there's enough going on in those divisions where Conor can, quote unquote, hold up the division for a little bit. Especially, you know, with the whole Dominic Cruz holding the belt for 3 years. You know, if Jose Aldo doesn't want to continue fighting, then strip him of the interim champion and then do another interim champion fight. You know, I don't think they should strip Conor the featherweight. title.
Oh, I think that would be a terrible idea.
I think he should. I don't think he's going to go back down. I think they should try to convince him to, and I think he should try to defend both belts, which would be huge.
That would be amazing.
I think that would be nuts, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I think that's what they should try to campaign him to do. Because, I mean, a lot of people thought his fight against Jose was a fluke. I don't think it'd be as big of a payday as like a Nate Diaz 3, but I think him getting a rematch against Aldo would, I think that'd be a big payday. I think a lot of people want to see Jose actually keep himself composed and try to fight because, I mean, if you watch that fight, you watch Jose before the fight started, he was shook. He had no clue what was happening. You know, they had the whole, you know, because he pulled out of the fight the first time, so they had to promote it and do all these interviews, you know, for a year to promote. He was shook. He didn't know what he was getting himself into. So I think if they were to fight again, I would think he'd last longer than 13 seconds. But I don't think Conor's going back down, so that's just talk. So it is what it is.
I would love to see if they do end up stripping Aldo because he just you know elects to not fight. And I think that's a reason to strip a guy. You know, if a guy's intentionally not fighting because he's upset, that's a time where I would threaten to strip him.
And did you hear what Jose said recently?
I did not know.
He didn't want to fight unless it's against Conor. And the UFC told him, "Well, Conor's fighting for the lightweight title, so you're going to have to wait." So he said, "Okay, fine. I'll take another fight, but I'm going to throw all of the fights on the rest of my UFC contract. I'm not going to re-sign, and I'm going to go fight somewhere else." He literally told the UFC, and he said this in an interview, "If you don't give me Conor McGregor as my next fight, I will purposely lose every fight on the rest of my contract so I can go sign somewhere else."
Listen, okay.
You think they're going to sign you?
No.
You know, if you're not a champion and you say that, fine. We'll let you fight your contract out. But you have the interim championship. You have a title.
You represent a division. You represent a
12-pound gold belt around your waist.
You represent a division.
They're going to give you a fight? He's just dumb. He doesn't understand how the business works. I'm not saying I understand. You know, I had two amateur fights. You know, Jose Aldo went undefeated for 10 years, so who the hell am I to tell him what to do? But I think I'm smart enough to know that you don't tell the promotion that you're fighting for when you have the title that you're going to purposely lose so you can go sign somewhere else. They're not going to give you any fights.
No, they're not. They're going to let you sit there on the shelf. But
yeah, you're a dingus. What are you doing, Jose?
Jose, he's representing one of the deepest divisions in the sport of UFC or in the sport of mixed martial arts. To me, I understand he wants McGregor money. You know, guys that fight McGregor, they get a big payout. If anything, Aldo wants that. You know, we can sit here and talk that, oh, he really wants to beat
Jose,
up McGregor.
Jose made several million dollars to fight Conor the first time.
And you can't tell me he doesn't want more of that. My man got a taste of the honey jar. Now he wants to finish the bowl.
I'm not saying he's dumb to say, "I want my next fight to be Conor," but, you know, if you went undefeated 10 years, you beat Frankie Edgar twice, handily. You beat Ricardo Lamas, handily. You know, the rest of that division, you know, you got to wait your turn. You had your chance. You lasted 13 seconds. Now give everyone else a chance and wait for your rematch. It's very rare in this sport to get a rematch. It's very rare that people fight twice, three times. So you got to wait your turn, Jose.
There's a
handful. Go fight somebody else. You know, talk some smack to people and maybe make yourself some of your own money instead of building your name off Conor.
There's a handful of fights that I think a lot of people want to see for a third time. And I think one of them is definitely McGregor versus Diaz. I want to see that a third time. I think it needs the proper platform, but I want to see that fight a third time.
Diaz won the second one. They shouldn't have even
They shouldn't have had it. But
that's beyond the point.
The fact of the matter is that's a feud. That's a blood feud, as we would call it in the world of WWE. That's a blood feud right there, and I desperately need to see that a third time on a platform, much like getting it into Madison Square Garden again. See, this is where the UFC as a company is on the uptick, and it's the fact that they had very successful, 205 was very successful in Madison Square Garden, and it opens up the doors for future big money fights there. And I think Diaz McGregor is another one you can put there. I think a lot of people will want to see that. I definitely think they need at some point to have a Rousey fight there. And I don't know if they'll be able to immediately book Madison Square Garden, turn around and do that within her rumored couple of fights. And we'll get to talking about Rousey in a second. But they have a platform now in Madison Square Garden. They need to start lining up some as they call them dream fights that we can get there. But, yeah, I mean, to me, 205 was very successful, and especially being in Madison Square. That's what I want to ask you about. Your opinion on having it at Madison Square Garden, it has a little more esteem being at Madison Square Garden, don't you think?
Yes. I mean, the Garden is, as the UFC so nicely put it, is the Mecca.
Oh, yeah.
They put in all their promotion stuff.
It's
huge. You know, that's been, other than Vegas, that's the place.
Yes.
For concerts, fights, everything. You know, the Garden is, you know, as they call it, the world's most famous arena. The Garden is huge. But I mean, did you happen to, by any chance, to see the ticket prices for this event?
I heard they were high.
So they have, you know, the floor seats, you know, the 100s, the 200s, the 300s, and the 400 sections.
Yes.
The last row in the 400 section was $600.
For one ticket.
My plan was to go to this. And then they released the ticket prices.
Good luck.
And they had released the ticket prices before they said who was fighting. But as soon as they released the prices, I'm like, okay, the only person that they could, you know, sell these tickets for is McGregor. So I knew McGregor was fighting on this card before they announced it. But, and the floor seats were $50,000.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, them going to the UFC, to the Garden, they're gonna do big fights there.
Oh, like, yeah.
That, they're only going to do big, big money fights there. As far as Conor Diaz 3, I think they can't do that fight for the title. They just can't.
No, it has to.
It's too stacked. Diaz hasn't won enough and fought as often as he can. It would be a huge fight. Yes, everyone's gonna watch it, myself included. And I'm a huge Diaz fan. I've been a fan of Nate and Nick for years. I would love to see Nate go in there and beat Conor and then win the title. But that's just absurd. He should not be fighting for the lightweight.
To me, that
shouldn't happen.
That's a fight that I would need to put. Okay, so let's see if McGregor can bounce between both divisions and hold those titles, and then maybe he gets beat by Khabib. Maybe he gets beat by an up and comer. Okay, maybe he does. All right, then after another fight for McGregor, start building Diaz again. And let that kind of be Diaz's last ride or McGregor's last ride towards something else. Because right now you have a superstar, and he's only gonna be here. You know, shelf life for a top guy in the UFC is not very long. So you have to capitalize on it. You have to do some big championship fights, and then you have that's your cash cow when McGregor's starting to dip off a little bit. That's your cash cow. But for me, before we go on to 206, talking about the Garden. Now, of course, I'm from Philly, or from the greater Philadelphia area, really from Delaware. When you think of a sports mecca, to me, it's always been the Garden. So many huge moments in the world of sports, basketball, hockey, concerts, pop culture. You're talking about just boxing matches there. It's been such a mecca in terms of sports, and really New York as a whole has been a part of that. It's, I think, the UFC and the Garden. It's almost like a match made in heaven. That's my opinion of it. They really hit a home run here. But anyway, any last comments on 205? We'll move to 206 and talk about the big fights there.
No, let's move on. Let's do 206.
206, headline. The headlining fight there is Cormier Johnson, but we also have Holloway versus Pettis, and let me see if I can get this. Oh, Cerrone versus Brown. Any other fights besides those you want to talk about, or you want to go to the big three?
I want to talk about Tim Kennedy.
Okay.
Tim Kennedy is the man. I don't know if you're a big fan of Tim Kennedy. He hasn't fought in 2 years. His last fight was against Yoel Romero with that whole Stoolgate thing. I don't know if you remember that, where after this, Tim Kennedy was beating the hell out of Romero in the second round.
Uh-huh.
Round ended. The beginning of the last round, Romero wouldn't get off the stool. He took like an extra 30 seconds. He wouldn't get off the stool for like an extra 30 seconds to let himself recover, and then came back and knocked Tim Kennedy out. So that was nonsense. And then since then, Tim Kennedy has been working for the government. I don't know if you've heard about the show Hunting Hitler.
What?
On the History Channel. There's like apparently evidence that Hitler didn't die where, you know, we're told he died. So he's been working for the government. Whatever. That's other stuff. And he's like he went over to Afghanistan and Iraq, and he's just a bad dude. And he was supposed to fight at 205 against Rashad Evans, who was dropping a weight class. And Rashad Evans had to pull out. The New York State Athletic Commission wouldn't, he had some sort of issue going on, so they wouldn't license him. So then they rescheduled it for this card, and I think this card's in Toronto, I believe, and the Toronto or the Canada Athletic Commission, whatever they have up there in Canada, wouldn't license him either. So now Tim Kennedy is left without an opponent, and Tim Kennedy has since been quoted as saying that he believes that Rashad Evans has legitimate brain damage, and that's why they won't license him, because he's got brain issues. Who knows if he's just starting some stuff, but he's recently called out Brock Lesnar to try to get him back in MMA to fight him. I mean, Tim Kennedy cuts a lot of weight to make 185 pounds. So, I mean, the heavyweight minimum is 225. So he could go up to heavyweight and fight Brock Lesnar. I don't think that's going to happen.
That would be interesting.
But I think it's funny that he's legitimately called out Brock Lesnar.
The story you just told me of Tim Kennedy is the most amazing thing ever.
Dude, you want to hear a better story about Tim Kennedy?
I want to hear all the stories about Tim Kennedy.
Dude, if you have time in your life, look up Tim Kennedy interviews. He is one of the most interesting people ever. He was recently on Chael Sonnen's podcast. I've mentioned it like 4 times. So Tim Kennedy used to be in the Army. He's like a special forces sniper or whatever he was. And ever since this whole rise of ISIS happened, he's been all over Twitter and Instagram and all this stuff calling out ISIS. He's like, come over here, I'm armed. Let's do this. Like, so ISIS has legitimately sent threats directly to Tim Kennedy saying, we are going to come at you. We're going to get you. So recently, before 205, he was at his house and he got a knock on his door, and his doorbell rang at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So he answers the door with a machine gun, because, and he's like, what are you, like, who are you? And it was USADA, the drug testing people from the UFC. So he's like getting all these bulletproof walls and windows on his house because ISIS has threatened to come and kill this guy. He is the most interesting person ever. He just doesn't care. He's like, come on, ISIS, bring it. Let's do this. He is the man. I love Tim Kennedy.
I so want to see ISIS send a one of their highest trained mixed martial arts fighter and do Kennedy versus ISIS
at Madison Square Garden. Yes.
Have Tim Kennedy come out draped in a United States flag and security guards everywhere, and Obama and Trump are going to be the judges.
My God, I love it.
And that would be the most amazing thing in the entire world. You can't write it better than that. That's Tim Kennedy. You just became my favorite.
He's the greatest.
Awesome. But you mentioned the Rashad Evans issue. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But getting back to 206. Got some good fights here. Again, Holloway, Pettis, Cerrone, Brown, Cormier, Johnson. 206 seems like it's going to... This is a transitional card towards 207. But give people a reason to watch really quick.
A reason to watch. I mean, you got the light heavyweight title on the fights, title on the line. It's a rematch. But I mean, and aside from that, you got Donald Cerrone, and you know, there's always a reason to watch when Donald Cerrone's fighting. I mean, Donald's looked fantastic since he moved up to welterweight. He was supposed to fight Robbie Lawler at the Garden. Robbie Lawler got hurt, so Kelvin stepped in. He was supposed to fight Kelvin at the Garden. Kelvin missed weight, so they rebooked him for this fight against for this card against Matt Brown. And Matt Brown is a bad dude. This is going to be a striking war. These two guys are some of the best strikers in the division. Matt Brown has some of the best Muay Thai, some of the best knees, the best elbows in the welterweight division. I mean, neither of these guys care. They go out there and they put it all on the line, and they like wars. That's going to be a war. That is the fight I am most excited about, and I can't wait for it.
I'm a big Anthony Pettis fan. Him going up against Holloway. Interesting to see if Pettis can beat Holloway. Maybe he has a legitimate gripe for a title fight. Then again, a lot of people in that division do. Interested in seeing that. And Cormier versus Johnson. This is going to be interesting. I see a lot of intrigue here. Johnson definitely has the reach. Cormier, he's a really good wrestler, so we'll see if he can out wrestle Johnson. But anyway, let's move on to 207. Unless you have anything left to say about 206, I would like to move on to 207 and talk about this is something that's gonna again when we get to these characters of a McGregor and a Ronda Rousey, and I call them characters because a lot of what they do is character work. I mean, if we were just talking about people, they wouldn't be on the microphone doing what they do. They're legitimately building characters. Rousey, to me, is an interesting character, and she's someone that really started the trend of character work in UFC, or at least popularized it in 2015, really 2014, if you want to go back that far. She has a fight with Nunez, and it's, of course, a championship fight. She has said, though, this is the beginning of the end for her career. I don't want to go too far and line up her fights, but what do you see happening? If she wins the title, let's just say she does. I don't expect her to. But if she does, it's a weird situation, don't you think?
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, you know, I'm actually surprised she's making a comeback at all. You know, I thought she was going to do the Gina Carano, you know, go undefeated, lose a fight, and then just say, all right, I'm out and going to Hollywood. Which she very well could have done.
She's been acting. I believe that she was. She's not a very good actress. But I mean, the WWE has been barking to get her in there, and I assume that's probably one thing that she'd want to do.
I like that too.
I like it as well. I mean, again, this is what UFC has to do. I mean, boxing has kind of brought it back. They had Floyd Mayweather do some things, but you know, UFC missed their chance with Muhammad Ali. They missed their chance with some of the icons of the 80s and 90s, getting them into the WWE ring and putting them out there for many people to see them, you know, become these iconic characters. Really, that's what sports needs to do. For me, though, if Rousey can pull this off, and I don't know if her mind is still 100% there. I think, if anything, she sees the finish line and she's just kind of, you know, going out there to put on a show, get money, and move on to her next fight. Not accusing her of that, but that's just in my opinion. If she can pull this out, though, it puts the division in a weird position.
Yeah, it does. But, I mean, I really can't see her winning this fight.
No.
I mean, you know, this is a sport that moves and evolves so much, and... You know, the 1 year anniversary of her knockout from Holly Holm just passed last week, and I mean, from what I've read and what I've heard from listening to interviews, she really wasn't in the gym until this opportunity arose, which was, you know, maybe a month or so ago it was announced. So I mean, you know, that's 10 months off where she was pretty much not in the gym, like at all. And I mean, this isn't a sport that you can take a year off from the gym and then come back and then have a fight announced right away. You know, you look at guys who have injuries for a long time and then they come back. They take a while to get in the gym and get reacclimated to the sport. But she just had this fight announced and was like, oh, I guess I got to get back in the gym then. You know, when Dominic Cruz got hurt and he came back, he was in the gym for a good while before he came back and got a title fight again. I mean, not being in the gym and coming back into a 5-round fight against an Amanda Nunes? I mean,
good luck.
Yeah, good luck is right, man.
To me, this has a lot of when Michael Jordan came back to play for the Wizards. If you remember that, where it was like, oh, he's still a good basketball player, but he ain't Michael Jordan anymore. And yeah, I just see that with Rousey. You know, I'm nervous. You know, if she goes out there and she gets embarrassed, that's a big knock. That's a big dent in her armor there. If she goes
that happens. I mean, there's already rumors that, you know, she's losing opportunities in Hollywood because of her lack of actual acting ability. So I mean.
Yeah, she
I feel like her losing her last fight was already bad enough for her acting career. But, I mean, if she goes out and gets embarrassed again and she really can't act, ugh.
We're talking about someone that went from the front of a Wheaties box to being a Hollywood darling to being the darling of the United States. And everyone was sitting there calling her Miss America and she's the most amazing woman ever. And, of course, she had the hearts of every man out there. I mean, she's hot. But after she got beat by Holly Holm, it almost was like it was a derailing of the train. And then we caught on to her mental breakdowns. And then she went to Hollywood. And then, of course, the murmurs came out that she's not a very good actress. So her doors are rapidly closing. She needs to... I mean, I don't know if she could be an analyst. I doubt it.
No, she's not a good enough speaker. She's got like a speech impediment.
That means that you have to put her into a situation where she doesn't have to talk. Now, you can do that in the WWE, and I don't mean to bring it up here. You can do that in the WWE. The problem is they rely off character, and if her character is going to be tarnished, they ain't going to want her anymore.
Yeah.
So Ronda, you know, she's got to feel a little bit of pressure. I mean, I understand that if you, and more than likely what's going to happen when you get those ESPN 30 for 30s, what if I told you that when you get those things, they're going to clip to the parts of her career that people are going to remember. Oh, the vicious knockouts, kicking Beth Correa's ass, you know, they're going to cut to those. What we're not going to remember is, well, we're not, what they're going to kind of exclude out and only include in the rapid finish that they normally do with all their 30 for 30s is they're going to exclude the Holly Holm knockout. They're going to exclude the fact that she's going to lose to Amanda Nunes. And I'm more than willing to say that. And probably her next fight will be a Juliana Pena, or she'll get another Holly Holm or a Kat Zingano match or a fight, and she'll probably lose those as well. Or maybe she'll beat Zingano, but she'll probably lose to Pena and lose to Holm. And in my opinion, that all of a sudden sets up the Rousey iconic character as someone a little bit more human, and we all know what happens there. Yeah. But outside of that, we have a couple other fights as well. We have Dominic Cruz versus an undefeated Cody Garbrandt, and we have Fabricio Werdum versus Cain Velasquez. What other fights are you excited for here, besides Nunes versus Rousey?
I mean, I'm a big Dominic Cruz fan. A lot of people think he's boring because he doesn't really get finishes. But, I mean, watching him just completely dominate people for 25 minutes and not really ever get hit, and just his footwork is magical. And I mean, this Cody kid, he's young, he's good, he's a prodigy of Uriah Faber, who has beaten Dominic Cruz, but then again has also lost twice. But Cody hits hard, so he can definitely win. You know, he can definitely put Cruz away. But I mean, in order to put Cruz away, you got to hit him. And, you know, Cruz is the best at not getting hit. And Cody puts everything he can into every punch. So I really can't see him lasting long in a 5-round fight. If he doesn't put it away in the first or second round, it's going to be a long night for Cody Garbrandt. But I can't wait. I love Dominic Cruz.
almost like a unstoppable force meeting an immovable object.
Exactly.
Hendricks versus Neil Magny. This one looks like it might make it to the main card. They may have to move it to the undercard. I really hope they don't do that. Your opinion on that fight, and then we'll move to some big stories around the world of UFC and wrap this thing up.
Well, Johnny Hendricks, ever since this USADA drug testing has came in, he's looked god-awful. I mean, his last fight, which I believe was against Kelvin, yeah, he got completely just dominated, and he missed weight, and Kelvin made weight for that fight, which is rare. But, you know, that fight was nonsense. Kelvin beat the hell out of him. And before that, he fought Stephen Thompson, and he got knocked out in the first round. So he's looked like garbage recently. And I know he said that if he doesn't win this fight, he's going to retire. Neil is long. He's got good wrestling defense. He's got good submissions off his back if he does get taken down. I think Johnny's going to lose, and I think he's going to retire. And I think he should, because he looks like garbage.
Some harsh words for Johnny Hendricks there, but ones that are more than warranted. All right, let's move to some big stories. You mentioned Rashad Evans and his medical issues. And so far, you brought up the Tim Kennedy comment. Have you heard anything else on Rashad Evans? I know UFC released a statement earlier today.
Yeah, they just said something like, you know, we're taking care of him, whatever. But, I mean, damn, Rashad's good. He's been good a long time. He's the, you know, the Ultimate Fighter season 2 winner, and what are we on, season 24 now? Mm-hmm. So he's been around a long time. Former champion at light heavyweight. He was dropping a weight class, and I saw pictures that Dana White posted. He looked ripped and shredded and ready to go, and I was excited to see him fight at middleweight, because he'd been discussing about dropping down to fight Anderson Silva for a long time. But I like Rashad. I don't want to see him get hurt. So if he does have those brain damage or whatever, I'd like to see him call it a career. You know, he works for Fox as an analyst, mm-hmm. and he's a good analyst. You know, he's a good fighter, so he knows what the heck he's talking about. So I don't want to see him push himself too far and, you know, end up, you know, slurring his words for the rest of his life. If he's got a good job at Fox now, and he's really not going to make a title run, yeah, call it a career, man.
Also, some big news in terms of UFC. It looks like CM Punk has announced that he will take up his next couple of fights in UFC. Me personally, I was hoping that he would maybe look to the amateurs or a smaller promotion and try to get a fight there, a quiet one, and then see if he can go back into the UFC. We discussed a little bit before the podcast as to who he possibly could fight. And I remember I mentioned it a ways back on our last UFC podcast, taking up the fight against the guy that lost to Mickey Gall to get the fight, which I believe his name was Michael Jackson. If they dig up Michael Jackson to fight him, I'm sure he'll find a way to lose. But, is that a logical choice for him to go to? And, if he loses that one, we talk about, you know, denting character, that pretty much destroys the idea that CM Punk will work in the UFC.
Well, him going against Mickey was just a bad idea from the beginning. I mean, you know, Mickey only having one pro fight. I mean, dude's a savage. That should have never happened. That should have never been licensed. And you know, Mickey's good, so. I don't really know much about this Mike Jackson kid other than his fight against Mickey. And, you know, it was like under 2 minutes and he really didn't show anything impressive. So I think if CM Punk really wants to try this MMA thing and he doesn't want to go to a smaller promotion, like maybe go to CFFC, or like a World Series of Fighting or something like that. And there's really no other fights in any weight class that you can take, other than somebody else who's also, I think that was his first, mm-hmm. Mike Jackson, I think that was his first MMA fight. I know, I'm pretty sure he's had boxing fights before, but I mean, if you want to stay in the UFC and fight on pay-per-view, you know, that's the guy you gotta, there's literally no other fight that you could possibly do. I mean, pick me. Call me Dana White. I'll fight CM Punk.
Now, I ask you this. If Punk loses this fight, what does he do? I mean, where does he go from here?
I know after his first fight, Dana White even said, you know, I'm not sure if we're going to do this again. I mean, if he wants to do MMA, he should go fight somewhere else. But so if he loses his second one and he still really, really wants to do MMA, he's not going to get a UFC fight. He's going to go fight for, you know, Bellator really has some, you know, as much as people consider that the minor leagues, quote unquote, Bellator is the number two promotion in the world. So he'll probably go fight for like a Ring of Combat or a CFFC or World Series of Fighting or something like that. But if he loses the next one, he absolutely will not fight in the UFC again anytime soon.
And that'd be a shame, because this was something that really hyped up a lot of people. If he puts on a little bit of a better effort against Gall, I shouldn't say effort, but a little bit better of a showing against Gall, maybe we're singing a different tune. But until then, Phil Brooks, you got to step it up. Speaking of Mickey Gall, it looks like he's going to Sage Northcutt, though it doesn't look like it's going to make it to a bigger pay-per-view. What's the update on Gall versus Northcutt?
That is official. Not sure on what card. I'm pretty sure it's in January. I think it's on a fight night. I don't think it's a pay-per-view. But, that fight is official. The UFC has announced it. Mickey has announced it. But I'm kind of confused on it because, you know, Sage fights at lightweight, 155 pounds, and Mickey fights at 170. So, I mean, I understand why he called him out, because they both come from that looking for a fight, like internet series. So I understand that. But, I mean, and they're both early on in their UFC careers, or MMA careers, I should say. Mm-hmm. So I understand why he called him out, but, I mean, he's not in your weight class. I mean, he's fought at 170 before and he lost. I'm gonna watch it regardless, but I thought Mickey should have called out somebody that, like, most always fights in the welterweight division. But I like how Mickey called somebody out, because, you know, everybody in the UFC now, they get the question after the fight, who do you want next? And they're always like, oh, whoever the UFC gives me. And if you notice, all the big, big guys like Conor McGregor, Chael Sonnen, they always say who's next. They always give a name. So I'm glad to see Mickey following that platform and that style. Like, if you get asked that question, who do you want next? You give a name. Give a name. Anybody. I don't care who it is. Tell the fans who you want next. And you know, more times than not, you're going to get that person if that person agrees with you.
As you said, it's all about building up these characters. As I will say, it's all about building up these characters and giving us a reason to watch. Mickey's a smart man. Mickey, you could argue, is a businessman. And he made a lot of money off of fighting CM Punk. As much as there was a pay difference there, and we all know that CM Punk made like five times what Mickey made, but Mickey still made money, and he's going to make money off of Northcutt, and he's going to make money if he beats Northcutt. He's going to make money off of the next guy that he calls out, and he'll continue to do that until he loses. So Mickey, you're a smart man. He's a man with a plan, to quote an entry song in the WWE right now. But anyway, all right, that just about does it for us here at blah blah UFC. For myself, you can follow me on Twitter at Benny on the Radio. Tom, you barely use your Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter's not my thing. I'm a Facebook guy.
Follow Tom on Facebook. Steve will be back with us when we talk UFC 206 and build into 207 and see if 207 gets another top-end fight there. I have a feeling that 206 is going to get at least one more fight, because I don't think I think they want to have a safety net in case Rousey and Nunez is going to be bad. And I think it's going to be bad, but that's just my opinion. For now, though, that does it for us here at Blah Blah UFC. I will see you next time.